Welcome to Worker Movement, a podcast dedicated to the working class, a podcast dedicated to raising class consciousness. This podcast is for you, for us, for the worker.
Many states, and I'm going to say almost all states, have public data laws that permit individual citizens to request government data. And these laws vary by state. There is also a federal law called the Freedom of Information Act. It's often abbreviated FOIA. And you'll hear people refer to these public data requests as FOIA. But in each state, they're not necessarily called FOIA specific to each state, but they're general concepts that every state has in common. And we're going to talk about accessing public data on this episode.
There's lots of public data out there that's already available that you just have to find and search for. You want to look up census data. So we talked about the last episode, how many houses are empty. That's in the census data. Somebody goes out and aggregates that data. It's out there. You want to know what the median income is. That data is out there, right? Because people want this type of data because it helps make decisions and it helps the economy and it's available, blah, blah, blah. There's publications out there. You can look at NIST and NASA, the JPL. Universities put out tons and tons of data. You have different farming groups that put out data. So there's lots of public data out there. But then there's a subsection of data that isn't published. And that's where the FOIA comes in, because this data is public data. And a lot of times you'll hear people say things like, it's at the courthouse, just go look for it. Or it's at the library, just go look at it, right? Because it's housed somewhere. But the question is what kind of data is that and how do we get to it? If anybody's read or watched the movie Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, there is a scene where the person's house is getting demolished in the very beginning. And then it moves on to the planet being destroyed. And they basically tell the inhabitant there that the plans have been on record for the last 2 years. If you wanted to make an appeal, you should have went down there and made the appeal because you had the chance to. And he goes, where are the records at? And they're like, well, obviously it's housed at the House of Records. And like, where the hell is that at? Right. So there's data made available. It's just, how do you find it? What are you looking for? And why do we care so much about it?
There are two classes, and you just described one. And this is public data available in data sets or catalogs that are widely disseminated by governments. If you want to search for census data, you can go to census.gov and you can generally download huge, giant data sets. The data is pre-curated and it's intended to be accessible in mass to anybody. Then you have this other collection of data, which is not mass consumable. There's no benefit for the government to curate it and make it publicly accessible to anybody. So this is what we're going to talk about. Three brief examples of this second type of data would be something like police records. Where did the police go? What did they do? Who got charged? It's not necessarily evidence that they've gathered, because that's probably not public, but the act of a police officer being at a given location at a certain time is likely public, but it's not widely disseminated. Another example would be anytime a government official, so an elected official, or somebody that's not elected but who works for the government, if they interact or send emails or spend money, those actions are generally public. They're official records. They're documented by the government. And another example would be public procurement. So if you do a bid, let's say you're going to build a sidewalk in front of the library. Three people bid on it. The deliberations and the scoring and stuff like that should be public. But it's not like these score sheets are published anywhere. You have to generally ask for it. So this brings us to three concepts that we're going to introduce. What is public? Who holds the data? And how do you ask?
So what is public data? So again, we have the two listings of public data. We understand who's holding it, but what actually is public data? So there are a number of classifications of government data, and it varies by state. There's typically a group of the data that is public and another group that is private. And this is to protect individuals from abuse and things, but it's also public data to make sure that we protect the public from abuse. So it's a balance between the two poles, right? Privacy and the public. So an example of the public data might be property records, so the taxes, who owned it. And this is where Zillow has a lot of the information, right? It's there, but there are also deeper tax records that you can go after. And those, in general, are public property or public knowledge at that point in time. Another example is what businesses are registered, if they are in good standing with the government, right? If it's like an LLC versus a corporation versus a nonprofit, what kind of business status they are, where they registered at. There's a lot of information that you want to see about a certain business because you want to know whether or not they're licensed. You can look up normally licensures. So is a doctor licensed? Is there anything against the doctor? But an example of private data might be a social security address or the names of kids, right? Or contact information that isn't normally public. So if you fill out a form on a website for the government to register your tabs for the year or register your vehicle, they're not going to share your phone number, your address, and your email address to everybody else because that's not public data. They're not going to give the address of the individual whose license plate is registered out there. But the license plate is registered, and you can ask that question, is this license registered, because the tabs are there, or like little stickers in the corner, what do you call those things?
This distinction between public and private data is generally fairly logical and reasonable. It's intended to be, like you said, you want to protect the public's ability to assess what government is doing in the name of society. And then on the other pole, you want to ensure that your private data is actually private. And this is a fairly, I think, simple distinction to make. But there are a number of other distinctions that various different states make. So one of them is individual data versus corporate data. So corporations might not have this private information classification. It might be always public. What's the registration? Did a corporation renew their license plate and get the little sticker? That information might be public. It really depends on your state. Another classification is law enforcement data. Some states are more lenient with regard to what is law enforcement data or security data than others. They might have different tiers where some information is public, that's law enforcement data, but then some might be private. It all depends on the state, and that's kind of the point of this, is that there are a lot of distinctions. Another one is medical data. So you could perhaps request a county to say how many people have died of COVID, and they'll tell you that it's 1,000 people, but then you go further and say who died of COVID, and they might not tell you that, because that's private data. The general idea here is to know that there is a distinction between what data you can or cannot access, and that it does vary by state. But generally, if the government is acting on your behalf as a member of the general public, you should be able to inspect what they're doing on your behalf. Because at the end of the day, government represents you, and you need to have the ability to interrogate what your government is doing on your behalf.
Absolutely. So now that you want to look for data, because now we've hopefully caused a little itch for you to have to go scratch. So you may want to ask questions about anything in your city, like why was this approved, when was this approved, who owns this building. I mean, it's a good exercise actually to go out and drive by your favorite building and see if you can find out who owns it. What you're going to find is that there's a multitude of different people that own different things, and you're going to find that they have some things like a corporation or just the name on a building or a legal counsel that files paperwork for them. Like, this is a fun little exercise. So the holder of data is normally associated with that type of data you're looking for. So if you're looking for who owns a business, you may have to call your county clerk or city clerk, because it may only be registered in the city. You may have to go to the state level and look for that holder. So you need to figure out where it is. And I don't mean what building or whatever it is, but just like who the holder of it is. So, you know, what entity is responsible for maintaining the data? And again, you got to look for the general patterns and what each entity does, right? Normally, the state holds state data, the city's own city data. You end up with property that could be in the county record. So it's a little bit of a, I don't know what you want to say, that's like a detective work to try to understand where it is sometimes. So if it has to do with colleges, you might have a college board that you have to contact. And in general, there is somebody on your side that's kind of leading the way, but first you have to understand where to ask. And this is where it can become tedious, because you start to have to start asking questions.
And a very basic example of this is the Department of Human Services in your state, whether it's actually called the Department of Human Services in your state, who knows. They probably maintain a list of vaccinations. So if you want to determine whether you're vaccinated, when you got vaccinations, all that good stuff, you're not going to go ask your state IRS. Like, that simply isn't how it works. The state IRS does not maintain information about vaccinations. The Department of Human Services or the Department of Health is likely to maintain that list of vaccination records. Very simple example, but you have to figure out what government entity is actually responsible for the information you're after. And generally it makes sense, but there are very weird oddities when you go up the hierarchy of kind of local to state control, where maybe the city is responsible for some piece of information, but oh no, in this weird case, actually that's at the county level. So you have to figure out who to ask at the county. Each different entity might have different retention rules. And what this means is that certain pieces of data will be kept for a certain period of time. So you may make a request to the correct entity and they say, oh, we don't have that data anymore. And that simply means that they're not legally obligated to preserve certain data for some period of time. This also, again, depends on your state. There is absolutely going to be a limit on how long data is required to be maintained.
They have the minimum requirement to hold data because they're hiding something. And that's the way you should approach every single data request, is that they're going to fucking fight you on it because you're getting in the way of them doing what they want.
So now that you know that some data is public and some data is private, and you know where to go look for the data, how do you actually ask for the data?
So this is the best part, because this has to do with your legal requirements under the FOIA, whatever it is. In general, you have to have the request in a formal sort of document. In most cases, it's going to be email. Could also be in, I guess, a letter. And there are some very interesting traps that could happen. So first, you have to understand who you're requesting it. Now, some states have that you have to go through a certain person. We are the head of data retention. We are the head of Freedom of Information Act requests. So that's number one. Number two, you have to spell out exactly what you're looking for in the records. I am looking for all communications associated with bus route decisions for the school district XYZ between the dates of January 2018 to December 31st, 2020, right? It's a bound thing. And you might even be able to say, I need all retained emails associated with bus routes because they fucked your kid over, right? Determining bus routes this year. Because you pissed off about it, right? And that's okay. You can be pissed off about anything you want to be because this is your time to be active. So then you're going to send it off to somebody. But there's some very important, again, traps. One is they may never respond to you. So your job is to make sure you put a reminder somewhere on your phone to hound them again. Because there may be statutes in your state that say they must respond within X number of days. They must respond. If that's the case, now you actually have standing to sue them. So just keep that in the back of your mind. There's also the ability where you may have to email their superior or the manager of some port or somebody else. So just keep that in mind. The next sticking point is they may claim that it is a review-only document, which means you have to physically go in there to review the document, in which case you have to make time on your busy day to go review it. They may charge an administrative fee to copy any files. So you must put in there that you don't want any files if the cost of it's going to cost more than $5, because you're going to go in there and review the documents on your own.
There's a gamification aspect to this, and every state has subtly different laws. Some states, you might want to make a very general request. I want all information pertaining to the bus route, period. You don't overly specify what you're after and you make them respond. Some states, you might benefit from being very, very specific and saying, on this bus route between this date, there's strategy to how you formulate your request. We're not going to get into that, but be aware that how you make your request and your state laws should be purposeful. The idea of having costs associated with your request, some states will have the ability to inspect or copy documents for free. Other states will require that any viewing costs money, copies might cost more. You might have certain inspection periods where you have to go between a certain time. Some documents you might have to get like a certified copy in order to inspect, and that might cost more money. Sometimes you have to prove your identity. Other states you can just anonymously request. It also depends on what kind of data you're requesting. Depending on your state, all of these different strategies and request formulation patterns have a optimal solution. And we're not going to ascribe what that is for every single state because we don't quite honestly know. But in your given state, you should experiment and you should figure out maybe what works best, what some of the patterns are, how do you reduce your costs, stuff like that.
Always be aware there is a cost associated with this, and always be aware that there's also a chance for someone to fuck with you. I mean, I take you seriously. And there are individuals in your state, most likely, who are championing data transparency. There has to be. There are individuals who are fighting, you know, the good fight, because we know that things that are behind closed doors screw us over, right? They're trying to make states as transparent as possible. And you see a lot of anti-transparency laws coming about because of it, because individuals are asking for data that is making individuals uncomfortable. And that's good. That's activism. in the chaos, right, we can create a better world or better system. And the only way we get chaos is by having multiple people trying and requesting things. You don't like a superintendent at your school? I love the school one because it's a very easy one that people can associate with. You can request any other communications about, you know, the COVID-19 response. If you really care to read 6,000 emails about fucking bullshit about nothing, right? You can ask for text messages of all your city council members. If it has to be retained data, it has to be given to you. If it uses a government phone and it's government business, that data must be kept. You can ask for it. Now, they may redact the thing where they're sending dick pics to each other, but again, you can request that data, right? You can request any of the communications associated with the police contract negotiations from the city council or the city member, city clerk or city manager with the police union, police chief. You may not get it, and they may stonewall you, and they may fuck with you the entire time, but you can request it. You can request all this data. It's just you have to request it.
And you'll learn pretty quick whether your local government entity is adherent to whatever the state laws are, or if they just have been wild, wild west for so long that they do whatever the fuck they want. One of the key societal examples of transparency being good is the rise of body cameras. This did not used to be a thing. It's a relatively new thing, and it generally stems from having a lack of a record relating to what officers have done. And it's actually been effectively proven that having a record via video is actually helpful to the cops. And it's something that benefits all of us. Having body cameras for cops is a good thing. It helps the cops be held accountable, if accountability is even going to be a thing, and that's a totally separate issue. But that's an example of transparency mattering. One other key thing, depending on your state, is who do you actually send the request to? Various different states have different models. The three kind of buckets or main paradigms that exist are you send it to a very specific person who's in charge of records. So it's a specific person. You have to figure out who this person is. The second is you make a request to a records request division at whatever entity. And this is maybe it's a web form, probably be an email, but you're making a request to a government entity as a collective. It's not to a single individual. And the other better option is that if you make a request to anybody that works for the government for data, they're compelled to figure out how to get that data to you. So there isn't a specificity of you can only make requests to person A, and if you don't make a request to person A, you don't have to have that data provided to you.
I love this episode because it allows us to train a little bit on activism and hopefully get people involved. Because it doesn't take much, again, to be active in this arena, because there is so much public data out there. And not only is there public data out there that you can request, there's a lot of open data out there that you can get. But you want to know how many square feet are assigned to, you know, waterways in your area? Look at it. I mean, you can request it. You want to know how this drain commission ruled on the new drains at the shitty Wendy's as it's going up and why they got a zoning variance? You can request that and ask why they got a zoning variance. There's lots of things you can do here because the data is public. It's just not made available. You just have to request it. And why do you care? You care, again, because of the corruption. Your local governments can be just as corrupt as any country you want to point your finger at and say it's corrupt. When power and interest choose your city council members, they will be corrupted because they are like beholden to the people that got them elected. And if you're never checking how they're doing something, they're just assuming that they can keep doing it because that's the way they've always done it and there's no issues with it. So you care because you really want to, though, try to do the most good or have the most good done for society, meaning you have to disrupt how they do their day-to-day operations. You have to go in willing to ask enough tough questions in order for them, the people that you're asking questions of, you know, to realize that someone's watching.
And when we talk about there being corruption at the local level, some of it's absolutely purposeful, and some of it is just absolute sheer incompetence. When we talk about the housing and the zoning, a lot of this is framed as, oh, we need a lot of new housing to go up, and every person on the city council is like, oh, we love housing. And they just fundamentally don't understand that they're providing a corporate giveaway, and it's not really beneficial to society. But they're not doing it to be nefarious. They're doing it because they're idiots, because they're incompetent. And if you go poke a little bit at their rationale for that, it exposes not only maybe their incompetence, but also that their incompetence was attributable to corporate profits. And that has a benefit as well. So when we frame this in terms of it's good for society, It's also good for electoralism to figure out what dirt there is on these random people running for city council, because at the end of the day, they're not functionally competent in a lot of cases. They're there because a bigger, better, smarter entity decided it was beneficial for them to exist. And by doing records requests and learning more about that relationship, you can kind of temper their actions in support of whatever entity is allegedly supporting them for their own profitability.
Yeah, and it also gets into, you know, the shitlibs in the world who believe that they're doing the right thing. That, you know, putting over another Starbucks is better because it brings in 3 employees and it lets them, you know, I guess, drink coffee. So, you know, it really does begin to expose some of the cracks. And at the end of the day, there are people that are corrupt. A lot of it is just sheer incompetence. Or individuals just don't understand the rules. There are people who just don't understand what they're there for. And that's the part in which we have to, you know, reach out and teach them the way. You know, we dunk on DSA because they're fucking stupid. But the problem is that they get people elected who don't know the fundamental rules or why they're actually being elected, because there's no training program for them. This is a great way for anybody that wants to be active to learn how to be active in the community, because you begin to understand how community works and functions, what the role of government is, how they're supposed to help you, and then you can make decisions on what you would do differently.
For future episodes and to learn more about the worker movement, join us at workermovement.com.